just shy of 100 seconds. The Wright brothers demonstrated that a heavier-than-air, self-propelled vehicle could fly.
Balance yourself like a bird on a beam in the air. She goes, there she goes, up, up, a little bit higher. Oh my, the moon is on fire. Come, Josephine.
The moment was electric, and its importance widely understood.
Say, don't you know you can't get Josephine with that old corny jive of 1917?
Almost immediately, there was an explosion of interest in this newfound technology of manned flight, and a gaggle of innovators began to build upon it. At the time the Wright brothers invented the airplane, American law held that a property owner presumptively owned not just the surface of his land, but all the land below, down to the center of the earth, and all the space above, to an indefinite extent, upwards. For many years, scholars had puzzled about how to best interpret the idea that rights in land ran to the heavens. Did that mean that you owned the stars? Could you prosecute geese for their willful and regular trespass? Then came airplanes, and for the first time, this principle of American law, deep within the foundations of our tradition, and acknowledged by the most important legal thinkers of our past, mattered. If my land reaches to the heavens, what happens when United flies over my field? Do I have the right to banish it from my property? Am I allowed to enter into an exclusive license with Delta Airlines? Could we set up an auction to decide how much these rights are worth? In 1945, these questions became a federal case when North Carolina farmers Thomas Lee and Tiny Cosby started losing chickens because of low-flying military aircraft. The terrified chickens apparently flew into the barn walls and died. The Cosbys filed a lawsuit saying that the government was trespassing on their land. The airplanes, of course, never touched the surface of the Cosbys' land. But if, as Blackstone, Kent, and Koch had said, their land reached to an indefinite extent upwards, then the government was trespassing on their property, and the Cosbys wanted it to stop. The Supreme Court agreed to hear the Cosbys' case. Congress had declared the airways public, but if one's property really extended to the heavens, then Congress's declaration could well have been an unconstitutional taking of property without compensation. The court acknowledged that it is ancient doctrine that common law ownership of the land extended to the periphery of the universe. But Justice Douglas had no patience for ancient doctrine. In a single paragraph, hundreds of years of property law were erased. As he wrote for the court, "The doctrine has no place in the modern world. The air is a public highway, as Congress has declared. Were that not true, every transcontinental flight would subject the operator to countless trespass suits. Common sense revolts at the idea. To recognize such private claims to the airspace would clog these highways, seriously interfere with their control and development in the public interest, and transfer into private ownership that to which only the public has a just claim. Common sense revolts at the idea. This is how the law usually works. Not often this abruptly or impatiently, but eventually this is how it works. It was Douglas's style not to dither. Other justices would have blathered on for pages to reach the conclusion that Douglas holds in a single line. Common sense revolts at the idea. But whether it takes pages or a few words, it is the special genius of a common law system, as ours is, that the law adjusts to the technologies of the time. And as it adjusts, it changes. Ideas that were as solid as rock in one age crumble in another. Or at least this is how things happen when there's no one powerful on the other side of the change. The Cosbys were just farmers, and though there were no doubt many like them who were upset by the growing traffic in the air, though one hopes not many chickens flew themselves into walls, the Cosbys of the world would find it very hard to unite and stop the idea and the technology that the Wright brothers had birthed. The Wright brothers spat airplanes into the technological meme pool. The idea then spread like a virus in a chicken coop. Farmers like the Cosbys found themselves surrounded by what seemed reasonable given the technology that the Wrights had produced. They could stand on their farms, dead chickens in hand, and shake their fists at these newfangled technologies all they wanted. They could call their representatives or even file a lawsuit. But in the end, the force of what seems obvious to everyone else, the power of common sense, would prevail. Their private interest would not be allowed to defeat an obvious public gain.
Fare thee well, don't you cry, bye-bye.
There's not a generation gap. I have to take issue with that. There's not a generation gap about stealing. If you take something that doesn't belong to you without paying for it or without permission, that's stealing. Any way you look at it, we haven't invented technology that makes the concept of it being wrong to steal. We haven't invented technology that makes that concept go away.
True or false?
Any way you look at it, we haven't invented technology that makes the concept of it being wrong to steal. We haven't invented technology that makes that concept go away.
True or false?
And coming up next, Bathrobs, Piers, Broadsides. Stay with us. Don't go away.
Another killing in open tonight. Sometime I think I'm gonna be alright. There's another killing in Palestine. Another madman on the street. Another killing in Freetown tonight, all for a worthless bag of stones. Kill me in the name of Jesus, kill me in the name of God. Kill me in the name of Jesus, kill me in the name. Give me guns, give me oil, give me cocaine. Feed me lies, feed me lies. So turn on your TV and listen to George. He knows all the answers. He knows all the calls. Kill me in the name of Jesus. Kill me in the name of God. Kill me in the name of Jesus. Kill me in the name of God. Take away all my profits, give me back all my scars. Too many children lying in the streets, crying in the streets. I just don't know what's going on. So turn on your TV and listen to George. He knows all the answers. He knows all the calls. Kill me in the name of Jesus. Kill me in the name of God. Kill me in the name of Jesus. Kill me in the name of God.
And that was Johnny Smith, Guns and Oil. Hi, I'm Robert Norris. It's May 12th, 2005, and this is Bathrop's Piers Broadsides. 2 hours or an hour and 50 minutes tonight of civil rights and local political issues that particularly concern me and hopefully concern you as well. Keep a close eye on websites like Indie Media, SantaCruzIndieMedia.org, which I'm actually going to right now. And I'll be commenting on a few things that are happening there. Plus, we have some guests, not in the studio, but phone guests that are scheduled to call in. I want to kind of give you some heads up on that. A mom has retrieved her children from CPS and is going to be talking about that as well as various stuff downtown if she gets to us. That's Shannon, who's given us accounts in the past. At 6:30, I'm hoping to get a call from Yale Bromberg of Tent University, Colorado. And I don't know if you've heard about that. You probably heard about Tent University of Santa Cruz if you've been following Free Radio or even the Sentinel, which had Tent University on the front page for half the week after the police went through their training exercises at the expense of the students up there on Monday, April 18th, last month. Tent University, Colorado, I'm going to read a little bit about that now on Indie Media. It's a respect, they are establishing their own Tent University, an invitation and announcement at Tent University in Colorado College. 24-hour social forum and arts festival will be held from noon on May 13th, that's tomorrow, through noon on May 14th, Saturday. The event will also be held in solidarity with the Santa Cruz community. Our version of Tent University is not a mirror image of the Santa Cruz actions for many reasons, most importantly because it's being highly encouraged by our administration, but it is an act in solidarity with the Santa Cruz community. It will be an open space for creativity, dialogue, and activism. All are welcome. And I'm assuming that Colorado College, I'm not sure where Colorado College is. It could be, I'm assuming, you know, I first assumed it was out of state in Colorado, but I think actually it may be closer than that. I'm hoping to get a call from, as I said before, or perhaps I didn't, Yale Bromberg, who emailed me earlier that he would be calling in at 6:30. So hopefully about that time we'll hear what's happening at Colorado College and we can find out where Colorado College is. But it's interesting the kind of inspiration that the courage, the resolution, and the solidarity of students at Santa Cruz UCSC has had on other campuses, and I think, well, most importantly on the campus up at UCSC. At least I'm hoping that's the case. It certainly kind of feels that way, although there have been no clear follow-up actions. It is true, however, that there is, again, on Indie Media, www.santacruz.indiemedia.org, there is a rally scheduled for tomorrow. And that's going to be at 12:30. Is that right? Let me double-check this. Let's see. Rally on Friday, upcoming Tent University rally. No response given thus far on student demands. And I'm looking for the time. Having trouble finding it. It's probably on Reddit calendar. So let me go back here and double check. Let's see here. The 13th. Rally to support Tent University, 1 to 3 p.m. Bay Tree Plaza starts at 1 o'clock tomorrow. Community of Tent University, that's Santa Cruz Tent University, demands that UCSC immediately stop the blatant repression of students' right to free speech. Will Chancellor Denton respond publicly, or will she continue to ignore student concerns? Make your voice heard. And you can also join the line of speakers at the rally if you email ljcarlse@ucsc.edu. That's again L as in Larry, J as in Joe, C as in Corin, ARLSE@ucsc.edu. If you'd like to pick up a flyer, pick up a stack at the Yoga Club Cubicle of the Student Union. table in the plaza or tent in the plaza, an outreach into the rally. Then there's a meet. There was a meeting, I guess, Tuesday, 7 o'clock, Stevenson Fireside Lounge, and maybe next Tuesday, too. The website is UCSC.tentstate.com. And you might want to check that Tent University website. There's actually further discussion of it on Indie Media. And let's see. Tent University coincided with several parallel student, community, and worker protests in the recent weeks. Wednesday of that week, in April, saw a statewide walkout against continuing educational fee hikes and holding back Proposition 98 funds for K-12. The April 20th day of action was called by Action in Defense of Education, AIDE, a statewide coalition of students from community colleges, Cal State, and UC. The week before was marked by Q Ask Me general strike of clerical and allied service workers that practically shut down UCSC. The upcoming rally on Friday the 13th at 1 o'clock was given to the chancellor as an opportunity to demand to respond to the demands of Tent U, which included banning the use of pain compliance measures on peaceful student protesters, a democratic forum for students' concerns with the administration, reinstatement of the journalism department, as well as the allocation of hard funds for humanities and free speech 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. A full list of demands is posted at UCSCTentState.com. The rally will also honor Pat True, UCSC worker and member of the local clerical union, Q, who went on a hunger strike to demand information be released on who ordered the excessive force on the 18th. And I don't think we have that. I don't think that information has actually happened. Which is a pity. I know that some of us have tried to get that information, some of that information from, the university police with Public Records Act requests, or from Mayor Rotkin insofar as the Santa Cruz City Police were involved, and we get essentially no information about that. At least I haven't yet, and I put in a Public Records Act request to the UCSC Police Department, and I've spoken with Mayor Rotkin and indeed played that conversation. Actually, I spoke to him the day after the police attack on the students. The use of reasonable force to clear away an illegal activity and disperse an unlawful assembly, as the police, perhaps an administration spokespeople, were wont to describe it. There's been a second discussion with Rotkin about this issue from the Human Rights Organization, a group of people who meet every Saturday, 1:30, out at the 115 Coral Street, the Homeless Service Center dining hall area. And three of them spoke with Rotkin for about half an hour, I guess it was on Tuesday morning, which, by the way, I advise members of the community to consider doing. If you have something you want to discuss with the mayor, he enjoys talking with the community, not in forums where he can really be held accountable, perhaps, but he has been certainly open in having conversations with individuals who want to schedule appointments with him. And you can do that by going to the city council offices, and that's at 809 Center Street, right across from the main library, or calling them at 420-5020. And telling them you want to schedule an appointment with the mayor, and they will whip out his book and schedule an appointment. Of course, if you request to know who's been talking to the mayor, who's been lobbying him, even though that document is kept by the city council and is a public record, they will hold it back from you. Unlike mayors in every other city and public officials elsewhere under the statewide Sunshine Initiative that was passed in November, our mayor feels apparently he's above that law and he doesn't have to respond to it until he gets sued in court or some other kinds of more serious actions happen. Apparently, he can do what he wants and will. I'm going to be playing this interview that Bob Patton, Bernard Klitzner, and John Teelking had with Mayor Rotkin, which ranged from reforms in the sleeping ban to Tent University and the responsibility of the city in that, or the lack of responsibility of the city, if you want to believe Mayor Rotkin. on Sunday when I come back, 3 or 4 days, it's 9:30 in the morning, I'll be starting the show. It'll be sometime thereafter, maybe around 10:30. I had hoped to play a preview of that, but I don't seem to have it with me. If it pops out at me, I will do that. But, it isn't at the moment, so I encourage you to tune in on Sunday or to check the archives later. You can go to the archives at www.huff.org. That's the website for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and also a place where these shows are archived. These shows are, of course, Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides shows. You can check them out. If you want to call into the studio and talk, if you've got some issues to raise, some concerns you want the community to know about, particularly if they seem to be somewhat related to something I'm saying, or concerns about abuses in authority locally, or police misconduct, or how people outside are being treated or mistreated, the number here is 831-427-3772, 831-427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz, of course. That's us. So, at 6:30, as I mentioned, Yael Bromberg from the Tent University at Colorado College is hopefully going to be calling in. Then at 7 o'clock, Reva Antin, who is a writer, an attorney with the National Lawyers Guild. I think she's an attorney. I'm pretty sure she's an attorney. And a KPFA activist will be calling in to talk about problems at KPFA, to say the least. KPFA, of course, as almost everybody who listens to this station probably knows, is a long-time listener-supported radio station in Berkeley, actually one of the first of its kind, if not the first of its kind, run by the Pacifica Foundation, which has developed into kind of acquired a corporate quality to it, where the management seems to be homogenizing and manipulating and repressing local programmers and so forth, as seems to be happening all over the country. And there have been several rebellions around this. I've been a part of some of them, although I don't live in Berkeley, so I haven't spent a lot of time up there. But when I've been up there, I've been in solidarity with the activists who've been trying to make sure that KPFA actually serves the community instead of the notions of a few people in management. And Reva publishes a newsletter called Confidential, which I was reading, and I got impressed with it, and I told her, I've gotten hold of her by phone, and I told her I'd like to have her on the air, and she said, great, let's do it. Her website is www.struggle-and-win.net. Again, www.struggle-and-win.net. If you want to look at her stuff, really interesting news about, well, what's happening to the radio station that a lot of people idolize and a lot of people listen to, but they don't really understand. Well, perhaps they do. I know I follow some of it, so I don't understand all of it. But I do understand that there's been a lot of shady dealings and authoritarian, repressive stuff from the folks in charge at KPFA, and ignoring the wishes of the subscribers and the listeners who actually support KPFA. So maybe we'll get the update on that from Reva at 7 o'clock. While we're waiting for 7 o'clock or 6:30 or someone else to call in, maybe you at 427-3772, how about a little of this?
And it's about 9:30 here on May 10th, it's Wednesday evening, at a safe event society for artistic freedom and expression. The donuts are here, the soup has all been eaten, and over here by the side, they have Manny climbing on the forbidden green railing, which now has a sign, seating area for New Leaf, Alfresco, and Cafe Campesino, smoking is not permitted. I've suggested to Marilyn about frescoes that these signs be altered somewhat to say, please understand these seats are primarily for the use or for the first use of customers, but others are welcome to them otherwise or some such thing. So that Officer Pam Bechtel and other dutiful police will not run off people because they're sitting there without a receipt or evidence of purchase. Mr. Roger, you hear about the smoke. You understand this is a no-smoking area, so you're under arrest.
I'm not under arrest. I'm smoking as it is.
I see. It's old smoky.
Where's the sign? First, show me the sign, and I'll tell you something about that.
Oh, okay. Well,
okay. Oh, I'm sorry.
So you're being... Anyway, Roger, aside from your questionable nicotinic... Your nicotinic habits...
smoking is not permitted. It says that. So let me say this about that. Signs everywhere, sign. Blocking out the scenery. Breaking my mind. Do this. Don't do that. Can't you read the sign?
Yes, sounds like a certain contempt for signs here. But do you have any reports, Roger, on your old pals at the vet's hall? We pause while Roger lights up a second cigarette in his quest for emphysema. Go ahead.
Dr. M.
No, he's pondering that situation.
I can't currently summarize what is happening, no.
Because you haven't been attending meetings or because you're sworn to secrecy?
Manny, I have a little child climbing on me and give me tons of attention, and that's part of the difficulty at this moment.
Oh, sure, a likely story. Blaming the boy, eh?
Flip in, we'll do today's example.
Yes.
It's not so much me. I went to see the Veterans for Peace, and I found that one person showed and tried to call that a meeting. So, I mean, if you're down to one person's calling himself a meeting, it's hard to say what's happening.
Veterans for Peace has gone to pieces. Is that what you're telling me?
Huh? The local one seems to be on vacation for the last several months plus.
There's no need. There's no war. All is well. Why can't the Vets for Peace just retire?
I don't know. I've been following the newspapers. It seems like there's a war.
Come. Let's not be an alarmist. The president has everything in hand. The city council has passed its...
I think the president has something in his hand, but I don't think it's everything. It's everything he's thinking about.
I won't comment on that at this time. So you have any other reports from the street?
Yes, I do. This young man here,
yes,
who previously aspired militancy, and I tried to talk to him into understanding being a doctor is better than being a soldier. But now he aspired in that direction, and today he came and asserted a doctor is the highest. You want to see what's the lowest? I thought, yeah, let's see it. He reached in a bag and he pulled out a toy gun. So you ask him the comments on that.
Manny, what's the story? Which are better, doctors or soldiers?
Doctors.
Why do you say that?
Because they don't fight like soldiers do. And soldiers use guns to kill people and doctors save people.
So do you know any doctors or do you know any people who are like nurses or doctors or healers? Would you like to know such people?
You know some nurses and doctors.
I want to, but I actually don't.
Well, perhaps we can introduce you.
Okay.
If I find some, I'll bring them over.
Okay.
Thank you, Manny. We've been talking with... Your name is?
Robert Manny.
And your last name?
Smith.
Thank you, Manny.
You won't find me singing on this song when I'm gone, so I guess I'll have to do it while I'm here. I won't feel the flowing of the time when I'm gone. All the pleasures of love will not be mine when I'm gone.
And that's SAFE, Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, belting it out every Wednesday night in front of New Leaf Market. You can belt it out, too. Just show up at 6 and share in the hot soup and the hot songs. And occasionally you might even find a flyer or two from me blowing around in the wind. Used to have a table there for HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, but various resource shortages, including vehicle shortages, have kind of eliminated that, and as well as other scheduling problems. I'm going to be moving shortly. I do have a car again, though, sort of, and it's good, but it's, who knows, maybe I'll even have a bike one of these days. That would be even better. You're tuned to Free Radio. This is 101.1, and it's also www.freakradio.org, and I'm Robert Norris. I posted something on the internet that's attracted a little attention. It actually got me a call from KSCO today, the right-wing radio station, the AM station 1080, which you radio listeners may be aware of. I am going to be showing up in front of the Rio Theater tomorrow at 6 o'clock or thereabouts, maybe a little before, with the intention of kind of putting out a trial balloon for Huff and Puff. You may remember, those of you old-timers who have been following this, that I've been concerned about the lack of accessibility to medical marijuana in Santa Cruz, particularly for poor people. And I note that the closing of the Pacific Coast Cooperative, the cannabis distribution center that opened right across from the Metro Bus Center on Pacific Avenue, was closed the day that the Good Times did a story on it, even though it had been open for 6 weeks with no complaints. And Mayor Rotkin continues to bullshit us, should I say, that he's going to be doing something about the medical marijuana situation. Or at least he seems to be extremely inactive and has been, in spite of promises, since November of 2003, which he made publicly, and I think he made them before that. And it looks like direct action is going to be required. Something is going to be required other than what we're doing now to make some changes. It seems particularly appropriate to set up a table in front of the Rio Theater, because tomorrow at 6, when the Santa Cruz Film Festival closes, there's actually going to be a film called Waiting to Inhale, which is the last, I guess it's being sponsored by Andrea Tischler, Compassion Flower Inn. It's followed by a panel with the Corrals, Suzanne Feel, I hope I'm pronouncing that name right, Bruce Merkin of the Marijuana Policy Project, Dr. Arnold Leff, and who's a local doctor, and Yvonne Westbrook, an MS patient and activist. These are all people who, as far as I know, have not come out publicly supporting a distribution center in Santa Cruz downtown or criticized the city law that seems to essentially prevent this. So I'm going to be kind of out there with the table saying, you know, if you guys don't want to do it, then maybe some of the rest of us have to do it. I'm going to be signing up people who, trying to get an idea of how many people are in medical need of marijuana for medical purposes, both with and without documentation. Though I got to say right now, the whole medical deal is a bunch of bullshit. Marijuana should be legal. Frankly, so should other drugs. They should be at least available by prescription, and if there are medical problems, those should be dealt with medically. I have to say that because we've been forced into this bizarre posture of, you know, claiming this, we're doing medical marijuana. We aren't really smoking marijuana. Whereas up the street, people are getting drunk in a bar and then running out and killing people in their cars. I mean, it's completely crazy, as we all know. And the question is, what's the way to change it so that we can get those 750,000 people out of jail who are arrested this year nationally for marijuana? And locally, I can't get the figures from DA Bob Lee, but they've been arresting them here and trying even people who are medical marijuana care providers like Roger Mensch and convicting them. And then how wonderful that Judge Stevens only gives him time served and $220 fine. And after a year and a half dragging him through the courts, and now 3 years formal probation. I'm sorry, I'm not impressed, Stevens. You know, you're colluding with a kind of harassment that not only hurts patients, but is sort of attacks all of us, not just people who are ill. You know, I'm sympathy for people who are ill. Certainly, that's kind of gross misconduct. But everybody is being attacked by the way the DAs, the judges, the police are behaving on this issue. I know. It's just their job. Yeah. I think we heard that one before, too. Anyway, tomorrow in front of the Rio, I'm going to be kind of doing a makeshift table to try to receive documentation. If you've got ID and a letter from a doctor, bring it around. Bring a copy of it around to leave with me. And we're going to then have a care provider provide some medical marijuana at a future table. Although there may be a little marijuana at this table, too. Who knows? If the documentation is good enough, we may be able to go with the gusto, provided the care provider is there and we have it all set up. It is a little makeshift. I had intended to do this a week down the road, but I got the wrong date, and I had to speed it up. So my apologies, but we actually do need to prepare, as has been pointed out by activists who've taken this whole issue much more seriously and much more done a much more thorough analysis of it, at least in terms of the legal aspects of it than I. Jim Losey of Santa Clara County has been struggling with this issue for a couple years, doing 420 celebrations that involve medical marijuana actions. He opened up his own dispensary and had to close it down in Santa Clara County. We had a chat earlier today. He may call in on the show today, and that could happen. I'm still hoping to hear from, it's kind of waiting right now for a call from Yale Bromberg of Tent U, and we'll see if that happens. That's up in Colorado College. But again, getting back to the Rio, the tabling tomorrow, this is also to kind of enlist support to challenge the Santa Cruz City Council by calling or writing into Mayor Rockin to get him to follow up on his commitment to reform the current law. I don't think he has any such commitment, but he's claimed he does, and I think he should be held accountable to that. To provide information for those unfamiliar with the current city law and politics, so you can maybe get a copy of the ordinance, take a look at it, look at some of the criticism, and then go inside and ask the panelists why the hell they aren't doing anything about this. And if you don't want to be confrontational, you can suggest it might be a good thing for everybody to get together and go down to City Hall and say, hey, why can't we have a distribution center in Santa Cruz like we used to have for, what, since from 19... the mid-90s through the end of the decade. You know, why did it have to be stopped by a law in 2000 cooked up by Rotkin Fitzmaurice with Matthews there? And then I have to say, you know, Valerie Mike Corral called in, but no other care providers apparently significantly brought on, you know, into the process. It's a shady scene. It's not good. I mean, it looks like favoritism. It also hurts a lot of people. And the silence isn't good either. And that's why I talk so much about it. Also, the table would be to gather information about the broader drug war in Santa Cruz. I'll have a little tape recorder with me, hoping to take accounts of any prosecutions that have come up that I haven't heard about. This is all a sort of anticipation of Drug Awareness Week, which is happening May 16th through 19th. That's next week. It's a series of forums and events which concern legitimate concerns about the drug war. Again, not too much that is local. The ACLU does not wish to tread on the toes of the local DA, looks like, or possibly don't hear too much from the Corrals either, who are will be at a forum next Thursday on campus, as well as this event on Friday. Now, I don't know if tomorrow's Rio Theater movie, how much exactly it costs. I want to let you know about that because that may be a factor, but it doesn't cost anything for you to come and register at the table if you are a person who either, if you don't have your documentation, you can register anyway, and we'll see if we can hook you up, and we'll also at least get an idea of how many people don't have their documentation. And also we're going to be sharing information and ideas around a tax and regulate initiative like Measure Z in Oakland. If you want more information about this, call 423-HUFF or call me on the air. We have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio. Hello?
Oh, I'm sorry. I must have the wrong number.
You're not calling Free Radio?
No, I was trying to call my friend.
Okay, well, good luck.
Thank you.
All right. Yeah, there I was, hoping. So that's happening on, perhaps it's happening tomorrow. And again, the point of this is to give away marijuana on the streets in a public manner, although possibly we won't be doing it tomorrow in terms of actually passing it on unless we have all our documentation lined up, and that I can't really guarantee right now. But we will be setting it up to do so, not on a regular basis necessarily, unless people volunteer to do that, but as a, frankly, a publicity event, and also one that will serve those who need it and meet with the care provider patient regulations, and hopefully press the city council to take action, press the county not to make the mistakes the city made and putting in the same repressive kind of restrictions on where dispensaries can go and so forth. It is currently, there is no regulation in the county, I guess, other than the state law and the state initiative proposition 215. So it's been pointed out to me by a couple people, look, how can you say that people aren't getting any medical marijuana? They can There's a place up in Felton, which I actually hadn't heard about, not the Hemporium, which, of course, is a Roger Mensch still is running the Hemporium. So if you want to... It's not clear to me what he did last time that would be different from what he's going to do this time that would stop him from being arrested and prosecuted, but the judge did say, Judge Stevens did say, that Roger Mensch is selling marijuana under appropriate guidelines of 420, AB 420, or is it SB 420? Anyway, it's the state law 420, as well as Proposition 215, would not be a violation of his probation, and so that they should not attempt to stop him from doing that unless he engages in illegal behavior. The DA wanted to stop him from doing that. There are claims that there are dispensaries in other places, like Felton, like MedX, of course, is a local but very small distribution service here in Santa Cruz, but it isn't, and it can't really deal with the several thousand patients that former cannabis club worker Kate Wells tells me, and I guess confirmed by Andrea Tischler, are in the city and county area. And, of course, many of the people are in the Santa Cruz area. And why can't Santa Cruz get straight on this issue and, you know, do something about it? Well, if you want to call 420-5023, that's Mayor Rutkin's number. He might be able to give you his answer on this. And, frankly, I think he's a little nervous. He squirmed on this issue when I brought it up at City Council on Tuesday at Oral Communications, which was at the end of the meeting, and required you to either have a television set and watch it on TV or call up people who did or sit through the entire afternoon session. Rutkin canceled the evening session, so the normal 7 p.m. oral communications was not possible. Instead, you just had to wait around, and some of us did. I didn't wait through the entire session, but I came down at the end. I'm going to be playing some of that on Sunday for those of you who share my self-flagellation interest in that. It's interesting to see how the council reacts or doesn't react and what other members of the public say, which is why some folks tune into that. Again, because it's channel 25, 26, 27, if you have cable, which I don't, but some do. So again, Rio Theater tomorrow, 6 o'clock. I'm going to be out there, a little marijuana, lots of papers, sign-up lists, petitions, hopefully 1,500 people demanding marijuana so we can show the city that something needs to be done. But if you want to be a part of this effort in a broader, more long-range way, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. If you can't make it down there for some reason or you're a little self-conscious about the possibilities of surveillance or arrest, which are possibilities, I don't think it's going to happen because we're not going to be doing anything illegal. But federal authorities say all medical marijuana is illegal and all that sort of thing. But I think they're probably waiting for the Supreme Court to beat us all over the head with their Raich versus Ashcroft decision, which is due to come down pretty soon. After that, hopefully we'll all be up in arms, so to speak. So, let's see. I think I'm going to play a little more tape from Tent University, which I recorded... This better be Tent University. I hope this is Tent University. Get this straight here. Nothing more embarrassing than playing the wrong tape. Yeah, it could happen. Let me try a little music and then give you the right tape, and I'll be back. Stay with me. Hopefully we'll be having Reva Antin calling in at 7 o'clock with information on KPFA and what we can do to reclaim the airwaves as we're doing here in Santa Cruz.
I'm headed on down to the South Bronx. That's where all my good friends live. Ain't got much money in the South Bronx. they sure do know how to give. People told me not to go there, 'cause the color of my skin. But you know what I found out about the South Bronx? Is the people are just like me and you. Is the people are just like me and you. Friend Edwin Duncan walking on down 167th Street. His daddy just got out of prison. He stabbed a man for just $5. He stabbed a man for just $5. Guys like Michael Jordan, never seen his black ass down on 167th Street. Too busy being Nike's nigga. Just sit around and watch his own people die. Just sit around and watch his own people die.
That's where all my good friends.
That's where all my good friends.
That's where all my good friends.
That's where all my good friends,
that's where all my good friends
live.
And that was Johnny Smith again, Guns and Oil. Disc is a little frayed, but we got a nice sound out of that. So you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM. And, of course, I'm Robert. And I just got a call from Yell Bromberg at Colorado College. But I asked her to call back at 7:30 because we aren't going to have much time to talk with her. She's going to run smack into Reva and Teen at 7 o'clock, so I'm going to kind of hope that that happens. Here's an opportunity for you to call in if anybody wants to engage in any kind of dialogue or discussion. If you have any thoughts on this medical marijuana situation, you can talk about it on the air. What happened to me last night, maybe I should talk a little bit about this. This isn't about medical marijuana. This is about another interest of mine, police practices downtown. But let's wait until we hear what this caller says. Hello. You were on Free Radio, but you hung up. So call again if you'd like. Call back, and we'll do it. I was coming back from the SAFE event, the Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, Street Performers Against Foolish Enforcement, as I like to call them, who actually have done really a great job over the last year of not just making a fine kind of warm community space there, but of actually modeling what it means to play music and return to the old Santa Cruz instead of trying to follow the torturous dictates of Pam Bechtel and the Rotkin Matthews downtown ordinances, because they violate those ordinances every week and the police have not stopped them. Of course, those kinds of activities are reserved when Pam is able to find people alone, and that's what, or you know, in more high profile places like in front of borders, or wherever it suits the fancy of a police officer to start enforcing laws that don't make much sense, but that are useful to have if you want to eliminate from the public scene particular people or make it difficult for them. Anyway, I was riding down the avenue, and I saw, maybe I should play the tape. I may play this tape on Sunday, but police were pursuing this guy who, I guess, he started at New Leaf Market. He dashed across the street to Cold Stone Creamery on Pacific, if you know where that is. Then he ran up the street to Borders, and one police officer, a female police officer, I think, on foot, yeah. And then two squad cars were racing after him, and he kind of cowered in front of the coffee roasting company, Dale Williams Jewelers, and waited for, I guess, sort of surrendered, and then. They apparently approached him with tasers. I didn't see this, but this was what two witnesses said who were sitting in a car about 10 feet away. We were actually just parked right next to Dale Williams. And the guy was, it was not clear why the police were pursuing him. It may have been a warrant. Might have been they thought he was intoxicated. He did seem like somewhat stoned and upset and irrational. But there was no account from the police, who later talked to us and tried to get us to give our stories. I just asked what originally drew your concern to the guy. I mean, that's not a confidential matter. If you are investigating a crime, and it's a pretty obvious thing, there's no reason you can't tell that to the public. You might, she, of course, shut down like a clam. She wanted us to, tell her everything we knew, but she didn't want to say a word about, she actually did reveal some information sort of in the course of asking us, she told us that where she'd gone pursuing this guy. He was finally set upon. There were 8 police officers there, 8 squad cars, an emergency vehicle which was not used. Initially, they gave us the impression they were going to haul this guy off because he had some sort of drug overdose or drug, intoxication or fit of some kind. But they ended up just They were kneeling on him. They put a mask on him after he indeed did bite a police officer. A police officer said he'd been bitten and looked like he was concerned, pulled up his leg, you know, his trousers to see that. And my initial reaction to this was, well, here's police subduing someone who is not cooperating. And you know, this seems like it could well be a justified police action and may well have been. But what I noticed was a couple things. I noticed the immediacy and the number of squad cars that showed up. 8 squad cars within 10 minutes to subdue this one person. Now, you may say, I mean, I prefer that police and officers as individuals go down there rather than using pepper spray, bullets, tasers, whatever. So, I mean, that there's something to be said for that. But I guess my initial thought was, what was the problem that provoked the initial contact? And I got the runaround on that, you know. What you usually get them to say is, oh, it's confidential. You know, you don't want to violate the confidentiality of the suspect. Even when the suspect is shouting, tell him, the police don't tell you, you know. It's a secret society. It's a closed society. It's to some extent, you know, they're trained to do that, yeah. But to another extent, this kind of privilege often tends to manifest itself as a form of arrogance, insularity, and it's not good. And I guess I saw a huge amount of force being used on one person just because he ran away. You know, if he had been trying to get away because he was a rape suspect, a murder suspect, had assaulted someone, it would have been easy enough to say that. He's a suspect in an assault. But that wasn't said. So I suspect that there was elaborate attempt to document that she had approached him. She asked a number of witnesses, you saw me approach him, right? As though, indeed, she was going to need to justify what she did later. Because, and this was, again, one of the most curious things, in spite of the emergency vehicle, in spite of the fact the guy was obviously kind of out of his mind, he was babbling, whether because he was freaked out by the police or he'd been intoxicated on something else, or maybe that was some other event had happened to him. They didn't put him into the emergency vehicle. They instead put him into the back of a squad car. And it was a peculiar-looking squad car. Perhaps those of you who are savvy with police procedures and equipment can enlighten me. It was a squad car which had windows, the back windows were trisected by, it had 2 sheets of glass, but the middle section had no glass and had bars instead. So it was kind of like an open-air vehicle, there were open-window vehicle with bars instead of a window. And it's kind of peculiar. I don't know where that came from. So anyway, a bizarre police incident last night downtown that I witnessed, and I'll play probably some tape from that incident, though I pretty much have given you the whole account. And some of the witnesses spoke to me. I didn't talk to the original witnesses. I tried to talk to the police officer who was questioning us, but of course she didn't have too much to say to me. And that's too bad. I think if the police department was more open about this and there was more community interaction, we would have both a higher opinion of the police department, more respect for it, and there would be more understanding among the police about what to do with certain populations of people that seem to get too much attention from the police department, in part because you got a class war going on. It's just not too well. It's not overt, but it's there in Santa Cruz, where a city where it's illegal for people under a certain income to be able to sleep legally at night. And that's a rare city. Less than 25% of the cities surveyed in the National Coalition of the Homeless's annual report of last year or the year before have laws against sleeping. There are laws against camping. There are laws against other things. But to actually make the act of sleeping illegal is, and the way that Santa Cruz does it is quite unique. And quite bizarre and quite cruel. And also, I think, a rather manifest violation of human rights, basic human rights. And who knows, maybe we'll follow, get some people to work on the project of Ann Fagan Ginger's suggestion from the Michael John Institute for Civil Liberties to actually take this issue to the United Nations, to raise the issue as a violating an international treaty. Anybody who's interested in that group, wants to form that group, wants to work on that project, give a call to Huff, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. So, let's hear a little more safing it up, and then perhaps we'll hear from Reva.
When I'm gone, so I guess I'll have to do it while I'm here.
Talking about a revolution sounds
like a whisper.
While I'm standing in the welfare line, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around waiting for a promotion. Don't you know I'm talking about a revolution sounds? Don't you know I'm talking about a revolution sounds?
Crying to the welfare line, crying to the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment line, sitting around
waiting for a promotion. Don't you know I'm talking about a revolution sounds?
So here's some visitors from Napa. What do you think of the music?
Pretty cool.
What do you think?
It's great.
And how often do you come down?
Once a month.
Well, why so rarely? What brings you down this time?
Get away from Napa.
Napa's, I think of wine, I think of Napa and mental hospitals. What else have they got up there?
Snobby people, that's it. Rich, snobby people.
But not you two.
No.
What's your name?
Sarah.
And you are?
Glenn.
And you don't think Santa Cruz is a little bit gentrified here, too?
It's a little more free here.
No.
It's a little more free here. There, it's all rich, all poor. There's no middle at all.
Money, yeah. In Napa, money controls everything up there.
Are you guys working?
Cops would mess with us if we were in Napa. Yeah.
Well, we kind of established this. We've been doing this every week, and we're actually playing illegally. They have laws against it. We're doing it anyway. So.
They actually have a dancing law in Napa where you can't dance in bars. It's called the no fun law. That's what Napa people call it.
Noise ordinance after 10. You can't make any noise without a license. Yep. And you have to have money to get a license.
Oh, fuck that!
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Enjoy. And grab an instrument if you want.
That's a nice man.
Thank you.
Oh, yes. This is what I talk with.
And while waiting for the call from, I think Reva's either Berkeley or San Francisco. She's up in the Bay Area. I got a call from Bob LaMonica. Hey, Bob. And hopefully you'll call back. He's got some, he wants some reactions around Raytech. And I've got to tell you, I haven't been following that story, so I can't really comment on it at the moment. But I'm happy to have you comment on it and have other people discuss your commentary. So sometime in a few minutes, perhaps, if you can call back, that would be good. Again, to kind of give you an introduction in anticipation of Reva's call, there's been a struggle at KPFA to rehire, I should say, to get the management to take back activist Bill Mandel, who's an author, octogenarian guy who, former Communist Party guy, who, Soviet expert, he's unionist fighter for years for civil rights struggles, famous for his opposition to, his outspoken opposition to the House Un-American Activities Committee in the 50s, 40s and 50s and 60s, and his outspoken attacks on McCarthyism at the height of the McCarthy hysteria. And he's going to be coming on. He's not going to be coming on. He's written a good book called Showing Talking Truth to Power, I believe, is the name of it. It's a, quite a thick autobiography. And he was dumped from KPFA 10 years ago, and there's recently, because of his, well, he treated KPFA at one point as a free speech zone and talked about some of the practices that were going on there. And he was essentially fired. He was refused access to the air. And hopefully we can get Reva to talk about that. They're trying to get him back again. A number of other commentators, including, you may remember, Amy Goodman, Democracy Now!, were also made persona non grata at KPFA in the kind of the management takeover. I think they already kind of taken over. But I'm hoping that we can get Reva, who's really much better informed on this than I am, although I've followed a little bit of it over the years. Again, her website is www.struggle-and-win.net if you want to check it out. I'm going to actually try to do that right now. And maybe I can actually pass on a little information. And let's see what we got here. Yeah. She issues bulletins, confidential bulletins, which they aren't confidential. They're open, but they're called confidential. Confidential number 10 is the last one I got. And it's actually good news. KPFA Program Council votes to return Bill Mandel to the air and reports it on Tuesday, May 3rd. KPFA's Program Council voted to end the 10-year banishment of Mandel and give him back a regular program. The show to be called Thinking Out Loud with Bill Mandel. This happened in the wake of a picket line by a spirited council of Mandelistas in front of KPFA studios on Saturday, April 30th, 10 years to the day that Mandel had been thrown off the air. And I kind of I want to read the description of why he got dumped. There's her confidential number 7 talks about this and cites a letter, which I'm trying to find here and haven't yet. Bring Bill back to KPFA. Could that be it? Sign the petition. Well, apparently he is back, or he's nearly back. I guess they haven't, I'm not sure they've implemented that decision yet. And I'm hoping we can again get her to give us some of the particulars. Let's see, I think I actually have a brief summary of it, which I was going to pass on to her. He was expelled for the crime of not having informed the producer, Andrea Kissack, now happily departed, and the morning show co-hosts, Philip Maldari and Chris Welch, who remain at the station, of his change of subject. What he was talking about was a column on affirmative action. He was supporting affirmative action against a humorist, Art Hoppe, who's no longer with us. He was a good humorist, but I don't agree with him on this subject. This is way back in 1995 at KPFA, so Mandel apparently was taken off the morning show for defending affirmative action. And neither Maldari nor Welch have ever apologized for their role in Bill's removal or worked to undo that wrong. Maldari is still the host of that program, and now they're offering him a place on that program, but he doesn't want to be under Maldari's jurisdiction, so maybe he's got some new deal operational, a new show. Apparently that's sort of what's coming down. But I can't tell you myself. I have to get it from the horse's mouth. Maybe I can get my producer to give her a call. I thought that she was going to call in, but maybe we can try to call her. So maybe I can get that going. We'll see. It might be possible. In the meantime, I don't want you to call in yet because I'm still hoping to hear from her. But again, at 7:30, we'll be hearing from Tent U, Colorado College. And tomorrow, again, at 1 o'clock, Tent University on campus here. Why aren't the authorities responding to the charges of, well, the documented police behavior that happened on April 18th? Again, no response so far to student demands. You can check that out yourself on campus and check it out. Tomorrow at the Rio Theater, there's also going to be a movie prior to Waiting to Inhale, which is going to be the movie where I'm going to be tabling at that event in front of the Rio Theater. Waiting to Inhale, let me explain, first of all, is a movie. It starts, 85-minute movie, starts at 6 o'clock, sponsored by the Compassion Flower Inn. Examines the current debate over legalizing medical marijuana in the United States. What are the claims being made? What are the stakes? 10 states have passed legislation permitting medical marijuana, but opponents claim that patients who advocate legalization are only smoke screens for the legalization of marijuana altogether. Waiting to Inhale explores every side of the conflict, taking viewers inside the lives of individuals whose lives have been uniquely affected by terminal illness and drug use. Is marijuana really a gateway drug? Is the Pope a Buddhist? I don't know. Anyway, that's my addition. Is there scientific evidence to support the claim that marijuana can treat the painful symptoms of illness such as cancer, AIDS, and multiple sclerosis? The film sheds new light on this controversial struggle, presenting exclusive access to the first medical studies on smoked cannabis to take place in over 30 years. The film features Valerie and Mike Corral, as well as other members of the Wham Farm in Santa Cruz, director and producer Jed Riff, co-producer and writer Catherine Covell will be present to just answer any questions having to do with the film itself, but we'll leave discussion of the issues surrounding medical marijuana to the panelists. Following panelists will discuss their perspectives on the debate over the legalization of medical marijuana. Valerie Corral, co-founder and executive director of the Women and Men's Alliance for Medical Marijuana, also a patient with epilepsy. Mike Corral, co-founder and agricultural director of the Women and Men's Alliance for Medical Marijuana. Suzanne Fell, hope I got that right, WAM board member and post-polio syndrome patient. Bruce Merkin, spokesperson for the Marijuana Policy Project. Dr. Arnold Leff, a doctor for WAM, oh boy, based in Santa Cruz, who served on President Nixon's National Commission on Marijuana or Drug Abuse. And Yvonne Westbrook, a multiple sclerosis patient who has been active in the fight to legalize medical marijuana and is featured in our film. That's, again, at 6 o'clock called Waiting to Inhale. I want to note, of course, that all those people on that panel, as I mentioned before, have been a little shy about talking about medical marijuana locally and, say, special privileges being given to one particular group while all of the groups are denied and all of their patients are denied a dispensary. Kind of interesting what Ed Davidson talked about in front of the city council. He talked about there should be no concerns about the medical marijuana distribution that WAM engages in over in his neighborhood, a residential neighborhood, which, of course, violates the zoning ordinance for medical marijuana dispensaries, which, of course, zoning ordinance is ridiculous and inappropriate, and I agree with him completely. And I think that we should be prepared to defend WAM against attempts to close them down because they're violating the law if the planning department decides to do that, as it did with the Pacific Coast Cooperative, which I would, you know, which I think is something we need to reopen, frankly. We need as many medical marijuana dispensaries as we can get that are legitimate and take some care in giving the appropriate medication to patients and let people get what they need. That's going to be happening at 6 o'clock is the movie, and shortly thereafter tomorrow is the forum, and then on the sidewalk is me with a table and some, who knows, some marijuana, some petitions, some leaflets and flyers, who knows what else. 4 o'clock at the Rio Theater, This Divided State, Stephen Greenstreet's 92-minute film. This 25-year-old Utah documentary filmmaker is one to watch, according to the Santa Cruz Film Festival writers. When filmmaker Michael Moore announced in September 2004 he would visit the lion's den of Republican Utah 2 weeks before the presidential elections, what followed was an unprecedented uproar from the community of Orem, Utah, who resorted to death threats, bribery, and lawsuits in order to prevent Moore's arrival to Utah Valley State College. An explosion of outrage tore the community apart, and those once apathetic to political views rose to the front lines. So began a heated war of protests, lawsuits, and death threats. Would conservative activists prevent Michael Moore from coming? Would liberal Utahians win out their fight for freedom of speech? Would Sean Hannity come to town to fuel the fire? The answer lies somewhere within the film, This Divided State. 4 o'clock tomorrow at the Rio. And, of course, how much is it going to cost? It's always a useful question. And I'll see if I can find that online for you. You can always go to Indie Media, a fine website, and then check for the film festival, which is a helpful place to go, because this is actually the ending of the film festival tomorrow. And what we see is Santa Cruz Film Festival. Let's take a look. See how much this is all going to cost you if you wander over there and want to see these movies. Let's see. Well, it gives the schedule, but I don't see the prices. You know, that's a real bummer, because you may end up kicking, you know, requiring you to pay a lot of money, or maybe free. Does anybody know? Here's a call. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert, how's it going? It's Andrea.
Hey, Andrea.
I just wanted to ask you about that event tomorrow night at the Rio Theater. Would you happen to know how much it costs to get in?
That's what I was just saying. I don't know. I'm going to have to cut you off real quickly because I'm expecting a long-distance call. But
Yeah, I'm sorry. I stepped out. I didn't hear you.
No, I wish
that.
I knew. What you can do is you can go online and you can give a call to 459-7676 for the Santa Cruz Film Festival. They may be able to tell you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
All right. I'll talk to you then.
And thanks for calling in. Yeah, I guess that would let us know. I'm not sure what the deal is with the film festival. I have a vague recollection that there was some free stuff in years past, so maybe that's what's cooking. You know, that would be cool. And I apologize to all my regular callers or irregular callers about kind of holding up things, looking for these out-of-town calls, but there is a call that's going to be coming in at 7:30, and I'm actually hoping that I know I got a call from Bob, who wants to raise an issue, which I'm sure he can do better than I. We're not going to have much time to talk about it. In fact, I don't see... It looks like Reva is not going to get on the air today, or if she is, she's going to have to get lucky and get through the other callers, because I don't think we can hold up any longer here. You want to call in, feel free to do so. I'm going to open up the phone line until 7:30, then I'm going to ask you to hold up so we can get this long-distance call from Colorado College, the mysterious Colorado College, mysterious to me anyway. Give a call if you'd like. 427-3772 is the number here if you want to get into the studio and talk to the folks. We'll see if anybody rises to the bait. I think what I'm going to do is do what I promised before, which is to play a little bit more of Kent University here in Santa Cruz. The day after the police did their interesting experiments on the students and effectively broke the back of the Kent University's determination to maintain a 24-hour presence there. That's unfortunate, because they had won their victory, as I've mentioned before. The police retreated, but the students, I believe under some confused or leadership I don't agree with, chose to direct people to leave. And so they lost the victory that they'd won. But the significant thing also is that the police were responsible for this terror that was created, because that's what happens when people are dragged away. It's a form of terror that is created. Here's somebody talking about that the next day.
Okay, well, I am here at the infamous Tent UC talking with
Indigo Moonstar.
It's about 5:30 there, Indigo Moonstar. And have you been, should I call you Indigo Moonstar or both?
Just call me Indigo.
I'll just call you Indigo. Now, last night you just missed the grand prize of a free ride down to the jail and back.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, you will get to Maine your own way back. You want to talk a little bit about that?
It was very close, right down to the wire, really. They were moving. They'd already cleared out two of about five lockdown circles, and they'd cleared about a third of the one.
Actually, seven lockdown circles.
Seven, you kind of, okay, well.
Maybe eight. I kind of, at least seven.
In the tent, they were packed in there pretty tight.
Rectangle of resistance.
Rectangle of resistance, the gnome. They were moving towards our location. We were really trying to hold solidarity together. We were checking in with everybody in our lockdown circle, learning everyone's names, just really trying to hold a positive vibe and send out as much positive energy as we could. We basically saw the police resolve and morale steadily weaken. We made it extremely difficult for them to remove us. And it was
were any of you removed?
Yeah, there was about 20 people that were hauled
in your particular circle.
In our group, no, though there was a woman who was actually subjected to a chokehold by an officer trying to pry her out of the circle. And I started screaming at him, she's a woman, over and over again. It's almost as if he snapped out of it and realized what he was doing. And at that point, I think they were pretty much broken. They realized they were going to have to pull out the tear gas and the billy clubs to really get us out of there. And the university didn't want that. So the Students Against War had been negotiating with them throughout the entire police action. And
did you know anything about that directly or through talking to those students?
Not exactly. Simply that Students Against War were directly facilitating with the campus officials and really encouraging, persuading them to call off the assault.
In return for abandoning the camp.
In return for abandoning the camp, though they did allow us to maintain a small presence here last night, of which I was a part. We did sleep in the tent. And actually, a lot of community members were worried because they didn't see us out here. But we were here, and they allowed us to maintain a small presence. We did have to disperse the crowd.
Don't you feel that on the heels of what was really a victory, because they every time they dragged more people away, more people came to the outside, that in surrendering your basic concern, which we spent 4.5 hours, 5 hours voting on, talking about, consensing around throughout the day, without any discussion with people. I talked to Will, and he said, well, I made a proposal. No, he made an announcement. He didn't make a proposal. There was no discussion of it. And I didn't you feel that this was a way, maybe it's responsible for the smaller numbers of people here today and the fact that I've heard that several people have canceled their classes and not come down? I'm concerned that that's the case, but what do you think?
Well, I think we did, as facilitators, do our best to facilitate a consensus process and to make proposals rather than state demands.
But not at the end, when the basic...
Well, at that point, the situation had escalated to the point where the university offered us a solution, a temporary one at that. But I think that they probably would have called the police back and continued with the action.
And there would have been a growing number of people, and you would have had more resistance, and people would have been educated more about what's going on, and you would have had more people here today. And you wouldn't have had people engaging in intellectual conversations about this, but seeing naked power in action.
I don't know. I don't know if we would have been successful if we'd tried to reset up the tents again at 1 a.m. after, protracted police battle of 3 hours or so.
It was never proposed. It was never discussed. It was a small coterie of people at the top made a decision in violation of the spirit of this camp. That's what pisses me off. And imposed on other people. And so in a way, you kind of contradicted the spirit of the camp that you started with, not you, but the people who did this.
Mm-hmm. Well, I heard three separate announcements go out during the chaos immediately following the victory with the police. I was a little frustrated with the process as well. I think at that point, the primary concern was harm reduction and getting everyone out of harm's way.
And I'm going to interrupt this rather interesting tape because I have a caller that I promised an opportunity to speak. Hi, caller.
Hey, host. Hi, Robert.
How goes it, Bob?
The Sentinel ran an interesting article on top of A2 Wednesday the 11th. It was about the city hiring former Raytech head to lure tech firms. What do you think about that?
Oh, yeah. I saw that. My initial reaction was sort of like my reaction when I heard that the city council has spent $650,000, and you know, to get the Santa Cruz Coast Hotel, you know, turned over to Northwest Hospitality Group, and without, I feel, with adequate public process. I mean, I'm skeptical. Let me put it that way. But again, I'm also uninformed, so maybe you can tell me your thoughts.
Well, they're paying a high-tech old salt, well-connected local, a token salary of $50,000 a year to do outreach, to attempt to attract high-tech business here in Santa Cruz. I think it's very commendable. I think it's a decade late, but I think it's very commendable. I think that the Mr. Cliff Warren, it is a major coup. As I said, $50,000 for a guy like Warren, who headed up Raytech, is a token salary. Very wise investment, something that should have been done 10 years ago. Now, I argue that they're really never, I'm not aware of any outreach, any aggressive outreach to lure tech firms to Santa Cruz until now, until this. So I think this is, in my opinion, very worthy and commendable.
Well, thank you for the thought, Bob.
Sure.
All righty, man.
Cool.
Hey, thank you for waiting, and thanks for calling back.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Take care.
Bye-bye. And again, I can't comment too knowledgeably on this. Sounds like Bob has more of a, perhaps more of a grip on the issue than I do. Don't know. Perhaps I would disagree with him if I were more knowledgeable on it. Don't know. But let me return before the Tent University Colorado College Solidarity caller calls back, because I presume she will be calling back, because she did get through to me off air, and play a little more of this dialogue I was having with an activist, a Tent U activist, who spent the night after the police. He was one of the privileged few allowed to spend the night in this, again, the surrender that the students did to the university authorities under the threat of all this police action, though, again, when the students had actually won, when the community, in essence, had said, we support you. Don't be intimidated. We are going to come here and stand with you, and they did. And this police knew it. So let's hear some more of that tape.
And the police being as agitated as they were and as tensed as they were, having them called off, having them march out, and having that be a victory, I felt was pretty inspiring and powerful in and of itself.
It certainly was a victory, no question about it. The problem was, if in the middle of victory you surrender, then the very spirit that you're doing is kind of betrayed, because what you're trying to do is establish an autonomous space, right, where people can feel free to really question what goes on and really make choices. And the university made those choices for the students, and the fear of the police is what motivated it, not new considerations or even a community consensus. Had there been a community consensus about this, I might not have agreed, but I would have said, well... But it wasn't. It was a direction to people to leave from the all-wise, all-knowing elite at the top.
Well, that's not at all how the organizers of this event are trying to portray themselves or trying to operate.
Oh, I know that, but wasn't that in fact what happened last night?
It seemed to be, yes, but I think we were given a pretty clear message that were we not to disperse, or were we to try and set up the tents again, that the cops would be called back in and the struggle would continue.
And that should have been put to the people, shouldn't it?
I suppose it should have.
Because now you have a fraction of the number of people, and they may grow again, you have the ribbon cutting coming up, but already a band has been dispersed, hasn't been allowed to play. Another matter, you know, another, I guess, scheduled event has been cut back by the police and by the administration without any kind of response from the community. It seems to me if you surrender, and you kind of keep surrendering, and you have a tamed event, but I'm just an outside observer.
Right. Well, we have the walkout planned for tomorrow. I think at this point, what we are most concerned about is solidifying our position to have this event, however possible, so that we can continue and really focus on the more important issues that we wanted to address with Tent University, rather than allowing the camping issue and the sleeping van to become the overriding, overarching issue. And it really does seem that...
Really sleeping van, it was police violence, and it was a police response, not the camping and sleeping.
Yeah.
You were simply doing what other students and other campuses have done.
Mm-hmm.
And you were doing what was apparently the majority of people here regarded as more than the majority, was pretty, not unanimous, but pretty significant majority as being necessary for the community you want to establish. And I've heard this criticism about the camping issue, and I am a big advocate of, obviously, civil rights for homeless people, but I think it's more than that. I'm also an advocate of civil rights for students, you know, I mean, and for other groups. And I wonder if I was just concerned about missed opportunities.
Yeah, I'm always concerned about that, too. But I really think that for the purpose of honoring the greater ideology behind this event and the greater, you know, the broader issues that we wish to discuss, coming to an agreement with the university right now seems to be a pretty good choice to make. I feel like we made a stand and we made a point and we demonstrated not only our ability but our willingness and determination to commit direct action and to commit nonviolent civil resistance if necessary. And we've also made it clear that we're willing to go that route again if necessary, but I think for the purpose of moving this event forward, and really, I mean, we have in effect lost a day, though we have had some very inspiring and powerful workshops that have been offered here today, and there were a good five or six class sections that met down here this morning.
Really?
As well. Yeah, definitely. So we're still...
The average, how many folks would you say have showed up here throughout the day?
They're discussion sections for lecture classes. They're about 20, 25 people, but we've had at least five or six of them today, as well as a good half dozen or more workshops that have been offered today. So we are, you know, going ahead with our program, and I think at this point, reaching an understanding, using this space as a day base for our educational workshops, and conceding to camp in the quarry at night, where we'll be able to invite our community members to come and participate with us, will allow...
At night,
yes.
So they've conceded on that point. They will allow community members to come on campus at 2 in the morning to camp with you, or to be there with you.
Well, I don't know about coming onto campus at 2 in the morning, but certainly being there with us.
They're able to get on campus, and they can stay.
Yes, indeed. There's the bus system that's available. We're going
to... This is part of the deal. Was this deal written? Do people actually have a copy of this deal?
This is the deal that's being brokered. We've gone back and forth with the university. Yesterday, they may have demanded that we take all the structures down and move them to the quarry. Today, we're in a position to demand they allow us to keep this space as a day base for our educational workshops and allow us to camp in the quarry where we can actually establish our community, where we can actually set up tents and have bands play on the stage with the electricity that's available there.
That's what you intend to do tonight?
That is what I think is the best option at this point, being that I don't see how much more benefit we'll be able to get from continuing the police struggle that we began last night.
And is this going to be put to the community, or is it going to simply be done?
No, this is absolutely going to be put to the community. There's going to be a town hall meeting convened here at 6:30, and that's the proposal that we're going to table, and that's, as organizers, what we're going to suggest, but we're not in any way going to dissuade people who want to sleep here tonight from doing that.
Meaning our gentle friends with blue.
Right, exactly.
Yes. We've been talking with...
Indigo Moonstar.
Indigo, would you like to say? I've been kind of steering the conversation in areas that interest me, but what would you like free radio people to know about? What would you like the community of Santa Cruz to know about?
I'd like free radio Santa Cruz and Santa Cruz County and City to know that making unilateral decisions is the one thing we're trying to avoid most in this event.
Not to repeat last night's mistake, in other words.
Yes, exactly. That mistake was, I would hesitate to call it a mistake because I really think that that decision was made with the best interest of everyone involved and was made rather rapidly under an extreme level of duress and fear and tension. And
I don't understand why everybody couldn't have sat down and talked about it for 20 minutes, because the police, I don't think, would have been completely counterproductive from the police point of view to come in and break up that conversation.
But I have to break up that conversation on tape because I actually have a live person calling, and it wasn't Colorado College, folks, although I think that there's solidarity happening there. This is from Rutgers. We have a special guest calling in. I want you to sign in, please, guest. Can you hear me?
Sure, yeah, I do. My name is Yael Bromberg, and I'm one of the 10 state organizers from Rutgers University.
Aha, and is that currently happening, or is it come and gone?
No, it's come and gone, but we're still organizing, and we're going to be having the week-long protest again next year. It was April 18th to the 24th on Rutgers campus.
Wow. Well, that's great. I know that I interviewed a couple of folks locally who were from Rutgers, happened to be in town, and they talked about the past event. I know one of the concerns that some students had here, this event at Rutgers has become a kind of an annual thing, right, where the university kind of collaborates with you?
Yeah, absolutely. This is actually, this is the third year that we are doing it at Rutgers. We we conceived of the 10-state model originally, and United for Peace and Justice endorsed us, and through them we were able to use them as a vehicle, basically, to get the word out to other student campuses across the country.
And it's interesting. I'm wondering, yeah. So this happens, what, in April of every year at Rutgers, or?
Yeah, it happens. The first, it's basically the third week of April it takes place. I don't know if you kind of gave the background of, like, what 10th State is about, but it's, the entire motto is for education and not for war. And the really interesting part is that every university that takes it can really localize the issue by looking at the rising cost of tuition at that specific university compared to the amount of spending, like, or the, you know, national spending priorities allocated to the war in Iraq effort.
Is there much opposition to the war on campus?
Opposition to the war? There is, but it hasn't really been organized in a specific effort like this. This is actually, I would say, well, this is definitely the largest anti-war event that takes place on campus.
The largest what?
The largest anti-war event.
And how many people were involved?
Oh, well, because it basically spanned from Monday the 18th to Sunday the 24th. And we had over 100 tents set up, packed with campers, and hundreds of students coming in and out throughout the day. We have workshops during the day and bands at night. And the kinds of workshops, like, we had anything from the Mexico Solidarity Network there, the Indigenous Committee for Solidarity, which basically is a Latin American-oriented committee. And then we also had, you know, Central Jersey Peace Coalition, Code Pink was there. There's all these, like, amazing workshops during the day that people can just come and, you know, participate in discussion and hear legislators. Who else was there? The ACLU was there. The Killer Coke campaign, fighting against the privatization of Coca-Cola on campus. So it's basically kind of raising a variety of issues, but all within the focus of targeting kind of like national priorities, but while we're doing that, also focusing on the importance of, like, to push democratization on college campus as well. So, for example, Coca-Cola, Rutgers is the second largest consumer of Coca-Cola in the country, and with their humanitarian issues abroad, specifically in Colombia, but, I mean, everywhere, we're kind of, like, focusing on the idea of why do they have a monopoly on campus, basically. And, you know, as an institute of higher learning, we don't want students to be treated as consumers, you know, especially with such a horrible, with a company with such a horrible record. So we push for kind of, like, all different types of issues.
So has anything actually come out, excuse me, Yael, has anything actually come out of this in terms of, you know, significant
gains since?
Yeah. Or
well, in the last few years, it's more so kind of an issue-raising thing. This year, we specifically focused on the student coalition effort. So we had over 55 student organizations there. And the Monday following 10th State, we actually had the opportunity to meet with the university president and vice president and talk about each specific concern. And as a result, now we're going to be having monthly meetings with them. Some student representatives will be put onto boards, decision-making boards, for example, kind of like talking about redevelopment issues that are going on campus and how the campus kind of contributes to gentrification efforts in New Brunswick, which is an urban city. And so right now we're kind of working towards being able to meet with them monthly and raising these issues and kind of keeping tabs on the progress of each one of the list of demands.
What exactly, you know, I mean, give me some concrete, how far have you gotten on any particular issue? How has the scene changed in the last couple years as a consequence of Kent University, if it has at all?
Well, Well, basically, I mean, originally, kind of the big difference with us and what happened at Santa Cruz was that originally we did have the administration kind of pose obstacles to testing taking place on campus. Nothing 3 years ago, nothing to the extent that Santa Cruz has shown, definitely. They just basically didn't want us there for the sake, literally, of preserving the grass. Since then, various members of the University Board of Governors have come out and support Penn State. We're recognized as having prevented tuition raises throughout the years, basically. Insiders and, like, the legislator have come out and kind of thanked us and, like, called us out directly on it. And the big issue really is also, like, a big thing that comes into play with it is the fact that a lot of times the student governments aren't representative of the student voice. They're kind of, you know, these resume builders that join the student government.
But, you know, and all this is good, but I'm just wondering, again, you know, yeah, you've been able to get the campus to, you know, authorities to okay your situation, but what actual, that might not be a good thing, actually. That might be a bad thing. I mean, it depends on what, you know, what effects you've had on the issues you're trying to raise. What changes have happened?
Well, changes that have happened is kind of, I mean, right now we're not even facing a tuition raise for this year, a proposed tuition raise for the 06 state budget. So that's a definite gain. And we're meeting with the university administration. They're actually being open to the issues of getting a paid staff for the Women's Center, with a central location, about expansion of the Center for Latino Arts and Culture. I mean, all of this is kind of, it's a work in progress, you know? It's making them aware of the issues as they stand and having them incorporate them into their plans. One of the main things with, like, the redevelopment thing that I was talking about earlier was that we're proposing an alternative proposal to the redevelopment on and off campus to include a community land trust and a community center for students to basically be able to be a contributing effort instead of just taking from the area. So this is all kind of, you know.
I'm sorry, what do you mean by that in terms of a land trust and contributing to the area? I'm not quite clear. I understand.
Yeah, basically what a land trust does is that it takes housing off of the private market and it creates an autonomous board that is responsible for the housing, and the board consists of the residents who actually live there and various community leaders. So it basically ensures more affordable housing, but also more participation in decision making of housing and of the community. And one of the things that we'd like to see happen is to get a community center in there so that students can offer kind of tutorial services, so that it could be, there could be like a room for a computer center kind of thing.
What center?
Computer center,
yeah.
So that it's more like skills training and,
What about issues of, we're talking about the war, has there been any kind of actions against military recruiters on campus?
On campus? No, there hasn't been yet.
You have military recruiters on campus?
We do have military recruiters on campus. We also have military recruiters that come into the New Brunswick High School, the local high school. But we've been working with, there's a coalition of people that are working with United for Peace and Justice and the Central Jersey Coalition to start to bring anti-military recruitment things to the high schools to offer for alternatives. And we were also working with Iraqi Veterans Against the War, and they're interested in doing a speak out at the high school about their personal experiences and kind of like targeting within the area. So,
have there been a lot of casualties from New Jersey that you know of?
From New Jersey, yeah, absolutely. But I think that there was also a Rutgers alum last year who died in battle.
What's the sentiment on campus? Is it mostly anti-war? Is it pro-war? Is it apathetic? Is it, we're not going to do anything?
It's largely apathetic, definitely. But there is a strong progressive movement on campus. It's something that has kind of been mobilizing throughout the years, and it's definitely higher than it's been, mm-hmm. I would say, in the past, definitely in the past 5 years since I've been there. But then there, I mean, then there's also kind of like the neocons that are on campus that you wouldn't expect to even exist within like our generation, you know? So, and they're very well funded. So, I mean, as they are in the national level too. Uh-huh. So.
What about, yeah. how about the police and the local communities? Do you have a large, population of people on color of campus, they're on campus, or and what is your relation to the surrounding community? Are you kind of in a white gentrified area? I'm not sure where Rutgers is.
Yeah, well, basically what Rutgers is in New Brunswick, and New Brunswick has a very, used to have a very high African-American population, but has since become increasingly, like the Latino population in New Brunswick has increased like over 300% since the last census. And students definitely contribute to the gentrification efforts that go on. New Brunswick is also the world headquarters for Johnson & Johnson, which basically came in and set up shop and kind of dictates how the community will be set up. So there's a lot of landlords, and there's a lot of investment that takes place, and there's an overspeculation. I mean, rents are ridiculous there. And, you know, kind of like the spread of arson, compared with where targets are zoned for redevelopment, you know, there's definitely a correlation between the two.
So how big is Rutgers?
Rutgers is, I believe it's like 33,000 students in total, and it's spread across Newark, New Brunswick, and Camden. But New Brunswick is the largest base of students.
And this is within an urban area of several million people, or what's this?
I mean, I don't know the exact number, uh-huh. but it's a city.
How are the police?
It's kind of it's a small city, I would say.
How is the relationship of the police with the students? Is there friction? Is there much concern about police misconduct? Are things pretty rosy? How are things going?
Things with the police are, I mean, cops are cops, right? So they were actually, while we were setting up specifically for 10th State, the cops were actually kind of like working with us, which was very interesting. When there was kind of like harassment being taken place by students who were just like passerbyers, or by students who were opposing 10th State, you know, if there was any like severe sexual harassment issues, I mean, we had a good relationship with the cops there. It was actually very interesting to see take place, because something that I wouldn't have foreseen at all.
This was last time. Because you've been going for 3 years,
year.
Right?
This is this year, but this year the scope was so much larger, and there were so many more people there to begin with. So, I mean, once it really expanded and encompassed a couple hundred people plus, you know, we definitely had kind of like security shifts so that we can maintain order within our own space. Because that's what this is all about, kind of like the reclamation of space and being able to treat it with respect.
What did you do if students started? You don't have medical marijuana provisions in your state law, right? You don't
No, we don't.
Do you have a pretty active hysterical drug war being pursued by police and prosecutors in your area?
Yeah, I mean, sure.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely.
And if people want to use medical marijuana, what happens to them in New Jersey?
In New Jersey, I don't know. I have no idea.
Okay.
For medical marijuana, I really don't know.
The reason I throw that in, I mean, it's actually an issue on the show that's peripheral, or it's a second issue we've been talking about. But one of the things that Tent University in Santa Cruz did was they didn't say, we're banning drugs here. They just said, we don't encourage you to engage in drug use here. In other words, it was a little different. They didn't run around kind of trying to do a little police action against people who may have been smoking or drinking. In fact, I didn't see anybody who did any of that. So I think that, you know. But, I mean, how did Tent University in Rutgers handle it?
Well, at Rutgers, I mean, basically we had a no drugs, no alcohol, no harassment policy, no violence. So we basically discouraged any use of anything like that, straight up, because we didn't want to have to deal with the consequences, basically, and we wanted to maintain the space.
Discouraged or actually policed it? I mean, did you simply say, we don't like this, or did you say, we're gonna deport you and turn you in or remove you?
It actually didn't even have to come to that. I mean, we had a poster up that said, you know, no drugs, no alcohol, no, et cetera. But it wasn't something, it's not as if the security shifts were going around specifically looking
gotcha.
For people and then kicking them out. It was more kind of like, this is a safe space. We want to maintain the peaceful environment here, and people respect that, you know?
Well, there's a couple things that are happening tomorrow. Tomorrow, up here on UCSC campus, University of Santa Cruz, mm-hmm. California at Santa Cruz, there's a follow-up on the police violence that happened on April 18th, a demand that the chancellor respond, as she has not, to the concerns that have been raised and, of course, the threatened punishment of students. They've dropped the charges, but there's still no guarantee that they won't suffer expulsion, suspension, and so forth.
Right.
That's happening at 1 o'clock up on here campus at the Bay Tree Plaza, for those who want to check it out. I mention this because people are listening to both of us.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then also Colorado College, which I thought you were with, but I was wrong. I apologize. Mm-hmm. Is having a 24-hour social forum and arts festival to be held from noon May 13th through noon May 14th in solidarity with the Santa Cruz community. And that, for people who want to get in touch with them, you can do that by, if I can get to the right space here, you can email them at tentuniversitycc@gmail.com. tentuniversitycc@gmail.com. We've been talking with, it's Yael Bromberg. Do I have that right?
Yep.
Kind of?
Close enough.
Hey, listen, thank you for calling in twice.
Well,
and anything you want to conclude
thank
with?
Thank you.
Anything you want to say before you go?
I mean, basically, to continue calling into Dean Denton's office to oppose what happened, to ask with the students. I mean, it's not enough that we ask for their academic suspensions or whatever to be removed. I think that, like, what I'd like to see is actually University of Santa Cruz take kind of, like, a proactive effort to allow for this to take place in the future, and not just to kind of, like, take away from, and not just to get rid of
penalties, yeah.
Yeah, penalties.
Thank you, Yael. I'm going to roll on you.
No, thank you. And I didn't even know about the Colorado effort, actually. That's really
interesting. Yeah, check it out.
I have to look into that. Yeah, absolutely.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Have a good night.
All righty. Yeah, that was Yael Bromberg up at Rutgers calling in. And, I hope that I don't know what kind of, I think the students have power here at UCSC because of the widespread information and outrage that went out and that was prompted by both what the police did and how the university has responded to it. But obviously, they were successful. They intimidated the students. But it still had a positive effect, at least the student resistance had a positive effect. And the students are following up on it. I'm not quite sure how much it's being followed up on. I may or may not make it up there tomorrow because I have to be prepared for the marijuana giveaway 6 p.m. tomorrow at Rio Theater, which is, again, prep for a giveaway. It's unlikely you're going to get marijuana tomorrow unless we have all our duckies lined up and you have all your papers in order. Your papers, as you know, is very important in our group. And in line with that, here's a brief article, Carte Blanche for the Terror Cops by Robert Shule. From the Counterpunch website, Senate gives Department of Homeland Security power to waive all laws. It's pretty exciting stuff. In passing the Iraq War Supplemental yesterday, the Senate also gave the Secretary of Homeland Security the power to waive any and all law in the course of building roads and barriers along the U.S. borders without limit and with no checks and balances. The measure is part of the Real ID Act of 2005, the controversial immigration bill attached by the House as a rider to the Iraq War Supplemental. The consequence of this decision is that Congress has given one man a license to waive any law for any reason or for no reason at all. Michael Chertoff, the Secretary of Homeland Security, leave it to Chertoff, now has the power to simply wave away laws that protect the environment, safeguard public health, ensure consumer and workplace safety, prevent unfair business practices, and ban discrimination at his sole and unreviewable discretion. There is too much at stake to grant any government officials the power to waive all laws. Immediately at stake, of course, are current environmental protections in the vicinity of the borders, but even more is at stake. These fences and roads will not build themselves. They must be put in place by workers who could lose all their workplace safety protections or even overtime pay. This new power comes completely without limit. Every law from child labor to ethical contracting can now be waived. Congressional supporters of this measure would like us to believe that this measure means only that the DHS, Department of Homeland Security, can speed up completion of one small stretch of fence in the Smuggler's Gulch area near San Diego. Nothing could be further from the truth. The measure is written so that Michael Chertoff will have unlimited authority to waive all laws in the course of building roads and barriers and removing obstacles to the detection of illegal immigrants, and it applies anywhere in the vicinity of the borders. Earlier versions of the provision would have limited its scope just to environmental laws and just to Smuggler's Gulch. But the version now passed by both houses of Congress applies everywhere along the borders and applies to all laws on the books. We expect government officials to execute the law. No government agency should be above the laws that preserve America's democracy. Plutocracy. Government has granted the Secretary of Homeland Security unbridled authority to act however he sees fit, without consequence, accountability, and any opportunity for judicial review. This is an article by Robert Shull, Director of the Regulatory Policy at OMB Watch. And OMB, is that Office of Management and Budget? I think it could be. Taking a quick looky here, this is OMB Watch is a nonprofit governmental watchdog organization located in Washington, D.C., to promote open government accountability and citizen participation. If you want to look at it, it's on the Counterpunch website, www.counterpunch.org. I'm going to play a little bit more of that interview from the Tent University from, I believe, the activist's name is Indigo, and Indigo Moonstar. Let's hear what Indigo has got to say, and then we will allow Uncle Dennis to put on some music, and we can all relax and just settle back. Tune in again on Sunday. I'm going to be coming back at 9:30, or check me out at the Huff and Puff table tomorrow at 6 in front of the Rio Theater. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides.
I think that you had already shown you were willing to resist it. Then you would have 200 more people resisting. I don't think so. So I think it was both unrealistic to succumb to that fear, and also the problem, of course, was it was a mistake in the sense that it betrayed the kind of process that you want to have here.
I think at this point it's more important for us to look forward and really figure out.
I like to look back so much.
I know, I do too, but I often find myself getting stuck looking backwards. And so I think at this point what we'd like to do is learn from whatever mistakes we may or may not have made and really move this event forward so that we can really continue to address the issues that we want to address and put this conflict with
what
the
are those issues?
Well, I mean, obviously the budget cuts in the university system and statewide, the cuts in the humanities fundings, while the UC regents and the administrators are getting pay hikes. Of course, the UC involvement in nuclear weapons research, which Will led a breakout workshop on today, as well as the whole recruiter protest that happened last week, the presence of military recruiters on campus.
Watsonville, by the way, in that. Can I interrupt you in that respect? Do you have any information how that went today?
I don't have any information. Was there an action in Watsonville?
There was. They military recruiters were on campus of the high school there.
Oh, wow.
And I understand that there was, I think, mixed results or maybe less successful results than happened here on campus when military recruiters were driven off.
Well, you're dealing with a much more disenfranchised community down there, a society that one could say those students may have far less opportunities available to them, and I think we could both pull out statistics that show what percentage of minorities make up our armed forces. So,
but I have seen that in Watsonville, for example, there is more militants and solidarity and more interest in genuine social activism than, frankly, in Santa Cruz. In Santa Cruz, you've got, you know, West Side liberals who don't mind having a sleeping ban that criminalizes the poor and, you know, don't mind waiting 2 years to have a resolution to get the U.S. out of Iraq immediately. We finally got a kind of a token resolution about 2 weeks ago from city council. But in Watsonville, you have people who are forming the Brown Berets. Now they are here, too. Mm-hmm. And who are formed a cop watch that actually is operational. I mean, you have people who are, you know, being oppressed every day in a more kind of a tangible. Well, it's happening here too, of course.
This is a very affluent white community we live in Santa Cruz, and for us to be claiming as
fucking rich honkies, man.
Yeah, well, for us to be claiming that we're being oppressed is kind of a shady ground or a thin ground there. But I think that we definitely experienced some oppression last night, and also this action itself and the actions that have taken place in the last couple of weeks are really catalyzing and recatalyzing grassroots activism here at Santa Cruz, and the type of direct action and direct confrontation with the university administration on key issues that we haven't seen for many years here.
And we'll hope to see again a lot of that real soon.
Absolutely. Our primary goal here is to stay proactive and to move forward and to move this event forward in the best way possible, and to let the process that we saw work yesterday continue to do so.
Let's get to it. Thank you.
Let's get to it. Thank you.
We're talking.
Jesus, what you gonna do? Whole world's collapsing, better make a move. Champagne for breakfast, diamonds in your hand. Next time around here, you better understand that this world wasn't meant for heroes like you. Only fucking monkeys living in the zoo. Only fucking monkeys living in the zoo. Everybody get down. Everybody get down. Everybody get down. Another bottle of whiskey, another cigarette. Turn another trick just to help you forget. Another day, another dollar. That's no lie. Need a lot of money just to get rich high. Need a lot of money just to get rich high. Everybody get down. Everybody get down. Everybody get down. Good morning, Jesus. Never made a move. Nails you to the cross. What's that gonna prove? Champagne for breakfast, diamonds in your hand. Next time around here, you better understand that this world wasn't meant for heroes like you. Only fucking monkeys living in the zoo. Only fucking monkeys living in the